So bizarre. All right. Great tune. Scott Reed and Rush Me Nair bringing you home on Friday afternoon on this frigid, careful how you say that, frigid Friday. It's so cold. Minus 33 with the wind chill. It is a ripping hard wind. Stay inside and stay warm if you can. But we have so much to talk about here. We've got another hour and a half-ish left in the program. And for the next 25-odd minutes, boy, are you in for a delight. Because it is a time of the day when we bring in the best and the brightest, the finest and the fullest, the fanciest and the freest, our friends on the smart speakers. And this fine Friday, we've got Dan Riskin, science man about town, Mr. Brainiac himself, and of course, Jen Tomney, who's also extraordinarily intelligent, and Vice President of Public Affairs at Proof Strategies. Guys, how you doing?
Great.
Keeping warm, Scott. How are you?
I'm keeping warm. I'm keeping warm. I'm getting some cold looks from Rashmi right now. She's like, what the hell kind of introduction was that?
But I loved I'm trying to stay warm. I loved every minute of that introduction, just for the record.
Oh, God bless you,
I did too, Dan. I'm just sitting here enjoying the whole show.
All right, guys, I got a question for you. I'm going to start with you, Dan, since you're so complimentary and, you know, smart, as I mentioned before. The federal department, with carriage of COVID compensation programs, the very department responsible for handing out CERB checks had to fire 49 employees because they discovered that even though they were, by definition, full-time employees, they claim CERB benefits. My question to you is this, and I think this is an absurd question, but is that good enough? Like the howl coming from people is not that they have been fired. It's, well, they should be fired and charged. Dan, is it bad enough? Do we need to drag them on a pickup truck? Like beat them with those CERB checks? What would satisfy your bloodlust, Dan Riskin?
I don't know, man. For me, I think 49, the first question I have is 49 a big number? For 49 seems like a lot of people. Like if there were 49 people in my office, I would definitely notice that because I work in a very small room. But there are 25,000 people working in this department. So 49 out of 25,000 is 0.2%. So it's 2 out of every 1,000 people that work there. Is that a lot?
For
me, it's like a systematic thing. Like, is the system broken that so many people could take advantage of it? If 2 out of every 1,000 people are doing this, maybe that's a pretty good number compared to what it might be in other scenarios. Or maybe, you know, what do you compare that to? So that's where I sort of get stuck first, is trying to figure out if I think that's a big number or not. And it seems like a small number, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't know what to measure it against. And then, you know, in terms of what you do with these people, it's great that they're fired. I agree that there should be repercussions, but I don't think the repercussions, there should be repercussions for anyone who took advantage of that CERB program. I feel like there's there's this tension, like, oh, bad government for giving out so much money and not being so careful. But I mean, we were panicked, if I remember correctly, when COVID hit. We didn't know how big this was going to be, how bad it was going to be. And the government just basically said, we're going to look after you. We got this. And they erred on the side of caution. And so they erred on the side of maybe giving out to more people than they should, as opposed to people who really needed it not being able to get it. And so I feel like the mess needs to be cleaned up for sure, but I don't have this built up anger about the system. I feel like the system kind of bled a little bit and it was kind of designed to maybe bleed a little bit. But I would like to see this cleaned up. I've got a bunch of thoughts on this, like everyone does, I'm sure.
Okay. So Jen, that's a long winded scientific way of Dan saying that he's for cheating. Are you?
Well, I think one of the things that I was happy to hear in this is that, you know, part of the repercussions, in addition to losing their employment, is that they're going to be expected to repay the benefit as well. And there's been a lot of conversation happening over the last little while about those repayments, because I think for some people, it was a bit of a gray area as to whether or not they were really eligible. Maybe they were kind of eligible, but you know, the parameters of the program being what they were, a lot of people are getting repayment notices now. So I'm wondering, like, can we triage? Can we have different categories of the people who need to repay? Because I would say that these 49 people should perhaps go to the top of the list. My concern is that, you know, to Dan's point, this now becomes the red herring in the conspiracy theories or the opposition theories over a federal government program that was really put together to help a lot of people and did help a lot of people at a time when a lot of people really needed help. And so what I wouldn't want to see is this kind of revelation being used to prevent programs that are designed to help people when they need help from getting off the ground in the future, because I think it's important to learn from what went wrong, but not to never do this kind of thing again.
Shouldn't the federal department be fired? I mean, they're the ones who gave these 49 people the CERB. This is just 49 people trying their hand at a new offer during a global pandemic in unprecedented times. I blame no one for applying for CERB. It was a very confusing time.
But if they were working at the office
working at the bank, they knew it was wrong to take from the vault.
So could you imagine, I don't know if all 49 discussed together, but can you imagine being that person going, I wonder if I get CERB? And then just all you had to do was put your name and info. Like, it was really easy to apply. So I think, and I'm not making excuses for these people, but I can imagine people at the time going, well, if I get rejected, I get rejected. Assuming that on the other end, the government's end, the one that's doling out the money, would have some sort of screening process to catch people who aren't supposed to get CERB. The big problem is the government didn't know who was supposed to get CERB or not.
And it's a good question, because if they were able to find these 49 people after the fact, they had the mechanisms in place to do this investigation and identify those people. So why couldn't we put those in place to screen them out? And I think that that's a consideration that should definitely be put into play before another program like this is rolled out.
Yeah, I don't even think journalists at the time understood how CERB worked when it was being presented.
Well, no, sure, because as Dan said, I mean, we were in overdrive trying to design something that would place an emphasis on getting money into people's hands. But those that are actually responsible for the construction of the program, sure as hell know they don't qualify for it. Like, I mean,
if they're working full time. Yeah.
I don't think it was very clear. I want to talk about sushi terrorism. Oh. We have yet to get to this story, and I want to bring it up with our smart speakers here. A Japanese company's shares has been plunging because one kid going viral, committing what is now described as sushi terrorism, might ruin the whole industry. So we have a few of these incredible restaurants here in Toronto where you can sit at a bar and there are options of dishes, fresh fish, raw, on plates, and you can help yourself to the items that you pick as they go by on, you know, a conveyor belt. This is very popular, obviously, in Japan, and Japan's largest conveyor belt sushi chain has had to suffer because there's at least one person who thought, I'm just going to lick some of this stuff as it goes past me. And now it's become trendy. Is this the end of restaurants? Can we just not have any good things anymore? Jen, what do you make of sushi terrorism?
So, I mean, first of all, it's gross. But then I also think about, you know, all of the disgusting and surprising and shocking things that we've seen gone viral on the internet. And my mind went to this amazing thread that I saw on Twitter a few weeks ago that talked about how brands have actually harnessed crises that were born on the internet and turned them into really successful brand campaigns. And one of my favorites being the All Reese's Trees Are Beautiful campaign. I don't know if you remember this, but there were a bunch of negative social media posts around Christmas about the Reese's treats looking more like poop than trees. And they turned it around into a really smart and funny digital marketing campaign to say, well, all trees are beautiful. And it really took off and went viral from there. So I'm thinking about like the zillion brilliant digital marketers out there who are already, for lack of a better word, salivating over this. And I'm here for it. I want to see what they come up with.
Dan, your hot take?
You know what? The world is a better place because there are conveyor belt restaurants. I was lucky enough to go to Japan once, and when I got to my first conveyor belt restaurant, I was over the moon. I had the best time. It was so exciting. I don't think I quite understood how to do it because I just kept taking everything off the treadmill and eating it before. So nobody behind me actually, it turned out it was the conveyor belt at the airport. No, but I did eat a lot of sushi. I had a very good time. And yeah, well, it's their fault for having luggage shaped like sushi. But I think it was really fun. And the thing is, anytime you go to a restaurant, anytime you eat, you are making yourself vulnerable to trusting the system, right? So, I mean, if you go to any restaurant that we're more typically used to in Canada, you got to hope there isn't somebody in the kitchen who's having a bit of a funny day.
We lost Dan. I don't know. He must be eating something. I don't know how you people can rationally talk about licked food. Yuck. When we come back, more smart speakers here on The Rush. Scott Reed and Rush Minair on Friday afternoon, taking you home, Toronto. Very, very cold. Very, very cold, minus 33. We are in the middle of our smart speakers segment. We are joined by two of Toronto's best and brightest. That was kind of the tagline that we've always used. It makes me laugh out loud. It's not that.
The best and the brightest. To discuss
our guests are
day.
Not the best and the brightest. It just sounds kind of cliche. It's like, oh, the best and the brightest. So here we are. It's a Nobel Prize committee.
We used to say it when you were a smart speaker.
They would actually.
We do have the best. We got to tell Dan and Jen that we were talking about how they are our favorites.
They are our favorites. I'd like to marry them both together, and then all four of us actually should be married. Jen Tomney, Vice President of Public Affairs at Proof Strategies. Dan Riskin, I don't know what he does. He's extremely smart. He has lots of room in his head for science and bats. He's an expert. He can literally, legitimately claim to be an expert. So that's important and impressive. I'm going to talk politics. So I'm going to go to my friend Jen. She and I used to bang around the halls of Queen's Park, ripping a government right to its studs. So let's talk and leverage our expertise and past glories. Federal government today withdrew controversial amendments to guns bill. There are a couple of amendments that were removed. Fundamentally, the big one was they moving forward this bill, and they had an amendment which included basically a list of guns that they were going to ban, a list of firearms, and it was like 400-some-odd firearm models, very controversial, started getting attacked from all sides. The NDP basically balked on them and said, listen, we're not even going to support you at committee. So the government today, in a full-on about-face, has dropped those two amendments. So the bill will now pass with the support of a couple of the other opposition parties. Pierre Poilievre says, we've been fighting this thing tooth and nail. It shows that we have humiliated the government and they've backed down. What do you think, Jen? I do think this is a hell of a backstep. Like, this is a confession of failure on the part of the government that they got this thing so wrong, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you and I have had lots of conversations about this over the years because it's one of those perennial wedge issues, right? That's used by either the conservatives or the progressives, depending on what they want to accomplish, to appeal to their base supporters. And it always will be, for better or worse. And so, you know, I think that this is definitely a suggestion that that wedge was maybe going a bit too far. But, you know, I think what we can't take for granted is that, you know, the gun lobby in Canada is alive and well, and it's well resourced and it's loud. And that factors into these conversations as well. So, I mean, yes, we are fortunate in Canada that we pay attention to this and we talk about it and we make changes. And our laws have gone a long way in preventing the kind of, you know, society that doesn't involve the kinds of horrifying regular mass shootings that we see happening in the US. But I think that it's important to challenge the status quo because we can do better. You know, the studies have consistently shown, and I'm going to stand on my soapbox here, that countries where there are fewer guns per capita have fewer gun-related deaths. The UK is one perfect example of that. Their rate of per capita gun homicides is much lower than Canada's. We can do better, but I think that we lose ground if we don't get it right. And so I hope that as part of this conversation going forward, that we spend the time making sure that we get it pitch perfect, because it is so important.
Moving on to another big headline here. The Chinese ambassador has been summoned here in Canada to talk about what is going on in the skies near us, this Chinese weather balloon. Now, China saying, oh, we're going to look into the reports of this spy balloon. Dan, what does this signal to you?
Oh, I got very curious. I was like, well, balloon? Don't you have satellites? Like, what is it that a balloon is going to tell you, China, that you don't already get from your satellites? Like, I seriously went down a serious rabbit hole on this. You know, the first thing everybody's asking is, well, if all the Americans who see it shoot at it, won't that solve the problem? But apparently, when you shoot a gun, the bullets only go about 10,000 feet into the air, and this is at 60,000 feet. So those at home with guns who want to shoot at this thing, if they see it, that's just not going to help.
What about Tom Cruise, Top Gun Maverick? Go up there and, like, you know, lay the lead to it.
Sure. That is an option that I personally don't have. I don't have a fighter jet. And also, I'm kind of curious about where it is. I've been trying to search the internet to get like people with video of it and find out where they were. There are rumors over Montana, or maybe over Yellowstone Park. Who knows? But it's over North America and presumably will pass over Canada or has passed over Canada. And so it's worth paying attention to. My search for what you can get from a satellite, or sorry, what you get from a weather balloon or a surveillance balloon compared to a satellite. Turns out satellites often give you better images. Where the balloons give an advantage is that they can watch a spot for longer. But, you know, it's really hard to tell what's going on here. It's hard to believe that anybody in the Chinese government would think that nobody would notice when they sent a balloon over. So I imagine this is some kind of something that's gone awry or a mistake, or maybe they're just testing out to see how good those capabilities are, just seeing whether this kind of an approach works. So obviously lots to pay attention to. There's always a context to all these things, and we only ever hear about little pieces of it. So it's going to be frustrating because we'll never know the whole story because everything's so top secret. But I think it's neat. It's making me look at the sky differently when I go outside in the freezing cold, just checking to see if I spot any balloons. I haven't seen any yet.
I think it's a flex, Jen. I think that the Chinese, I mean, they've put something. Obviously, they have sophisticated surveillance programs, as do the United States, lots of other nations. I think they knew this would be seen. They didn't care that it was going to be seen. They were being brazen. They said, oh, no, it's a weather balloon. Uh-huh, sure. I think that that was the point. I think that it's a flex, and they're saying that's exactly how bold we intend to be, which concerns me because it feels like they're saying, yeah, we're willing to escalate our aggressiveness. And I worry, what does that mean in terms of clash of, you know, societies, class of nations, clash of nations between the United States and China?
So, you know, and I think you raise a good point, because is it crazy that I just kind of figured this was happening all the time? Like, there's a reason why this has been able to be spotted. And my question is it a flex that in return that we're not shooting this thing down? Like, what is actually going on behind the scenes? Because for all intents and purposes, the U.S. could take care of this pretty quickly. Why aren't we?
I'm with you. I think there's a lot more geopolitics going on here. I don't think this is that innovative in terms of espionage and surveillance. I do think the political message behind permitting people to see your technological spy, I think there's something significant there. And, you know, it's probably going to take us just even a little further down the path to hell that we've all been traveling recently.
Can I throw in one more thing? I'm reminded of the time that Iran had a missile or something that blew up on the launch pad, and there was a satellite surveillance image of that damage that had happened, and Trump tweeted out this picture, and he'd obviously held the piece of paper that was given to him in his briefing, and he took a picture with the cell phone and then tweeted out and said, haha, Iran, joke's on you. But in doing so, revealed 20 years of secrets about the capabilities of U.S. satellites that were totally top secret. And so they showed their hand on a whole bunch of stuff. So if that machinery that's up there, maybe they don't want to shoot it down because they don't want it broken. They want to get it in their hands so that they can take it apart and see exactly how it's built, so they can understand the capabilities of China.
Also, don't elect a raw bleeding ego as your leader. Dan Riskin, Jen Tomney, Smart Speakers, thanks for being here.